Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to BikeRadio.me's The Mystical Crew Show. For network or show information, visit www.BikeRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, The Mystical Crew Show with your host, Robert Sharp.
Well, everybody, this is, as you can see, Blog Talk is having some issues that continued from last night. So anyway, tonight my very special guest is Ed Ozowski. We're going to be talking about the paranormal world and the study of paranormal phenomena. With more than 30 years' experience in pioneering paranormal research, Edward has had the opportunity to conduct preternatural research throughout the continental United States, instruct paranormal studies at a local college, and establish the research organization known as Hauntings Research. Ed is a professional member of the prestigious Rhine Research Center, located on the campus of Duke University. In addition, he is a member of many of the other renowned professional scientific societies in the United States. He is director of paranormal research at Hauntings Research and an instructor of paranormal studies at Pittsburgh Area College. You can find out more about Ed. I have a direct link to his LinkedIn page in the show page description, as well as in the show page description, I have a direct link to his Facebook page. So you can find all about Ed at those two locations. So with that, let me go ahead and welcome Ed to the show. Good evening, Ed.
Good evening, Robert. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's a pleasure. I've been looking forward to this. I love the fact of talking to somebody who's actually spent a long time, you know, studying the paranormal phenomena. If you wouldn't mind, can you give the listeners just a little bit more of a background than what I gave, and you know what got you interested in the whole paranormal phenomena?
Well, as you mentioned, I have over 30 years' experience in the study, research, and investigation of paranormal phenomena and its implications for our understanding of consciousness, the universe, and the nature of existence. I'm an instructor of paranormal studies. I do some lecturing. I'm a parapsychology researcher, author, in-field investigator, and do research in the development of scientific etheric to physical communication, and also some research into recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis, which many people know as the more familiar poltergeist activity. I actually got involved in the field because of interactions that I had as a child with paranormal events, many of which were very, very traumatic, even to the point of scarring me psychologically. So as a result, I grew up with a very intense curiosity about the possibilities that there is something outside of the normal, which does interact with us. And my quest was, of course, to find out exactly what is it that is interacting with us? What was it that was interacting with me as a child? And actually all my life. That led me into a course following graduate school in which I was able to rub elbows with some of the great minds in parapsychology research, gentlemen such as Dr. Ian Stevenson at the University of Virginia, in his just extraordinary work in reincarnation. Dr. J.B. Ryan at Duke University with his work on ESP and in laboratory testing. Bill Roll and his work with with spontaneous psychokinesis, and Robert John at Princeton University with his pair research institute. So I've had the opportunity, as I've mentioned, to learn scientific modality from some of the true legends in the field of paranormal research. And so I've been very, very fortunate.
Wow, that's, you know, that's, I mean, you're talking about the names in the industry, you know, and, you know, that are, you know, kind of, that lead the way, you know, in research. Now, what would you say, I mean, as far as, you know, you mentioned that there was like a childhood incident that, you know, that was scarred. What was it, did it involve, you know, like a ghost apparition, or what, if you don't mind me asking, what that was?
No, I'm glad to talk about it, actually. I think that people need to be aware of these things. The very first incident that I have of my life is a confrontation with what they call a shadow ghost, which appeared at my crib, talked me into climbing up onto the railing of my crib from whence I fell and cracked my head open. And from there, it just progressed. As a matter of fact, if your listeners will go to our website, Hauntings Research, it's Hauntings with an S, hauntingsresearch.com, we have a page with pictures, and one of the pictures is a picture of me when I'm approximately three and a half years old with my family in the backyard. And in the picture, which unfortunately, I have to admit, dates to around 1950, 51, somewhere in there, shows us encapsulated with ectoswirls, or ghosts, if you will. And as I mentioned, it's something that followed me at the age of 4, 5 years old, somewhere in there. We moved in with my grandparents, and because of size restraints, I was forced to sleep up in the attic. Now, that would generally be a traumatic thing for any 4 or 5 year old, but in this situation, the attic was very active paranormally, and as a result, I spent most of my evening hours with the blankets over my head, isolating myself, while I listened to voices, while I felt touches, where I heard doors opening and closing, footsteps around my bed. And this went on for years. I mean, every night, every single night. And this is why I say I was highly traumatized, because back then, no one talked about this, these kind of things, and there wasn't. So there was no one that I could talk to. There was no one that could explain to me what was going on. There was no one that could help me get over my fear. And this is something that kind of battle hardened me for experiences later in life, and I guess, if you want to look at the bright side of that whole picture, it's that, you know, it certainly prepared me and hardened me for what I was to run into in my adult life.
Well, it certainly set you on the path to be able to do what you do, you know, and, you know, that's fascinating. Now, were your parents aware of this? You know, what was their feeling? Because, you know, one of the things that I find interesting is, you know, so many people who have these experiences, a lot of them have them when they're young, you know, when, you know, before they're jaded and told that they can't see this or can't, you know, these kinds of things don't exist. But I find it interesting to find, you know, whether or not, you know, the family situation, you know, is either supportive or if it's just one of those things where it's kind of clamped down on or just not spoken about.
Your observations are right on. It's very common for people that do a lot of work in this industry to have had experiences such as mine in childhood. But to answer your question, we're talking about a strict Catholic 1950s household.
Mm-hmm.
First off, feelings were not exactly free-flowing. Secondly, if you were talking about ghosts, you had better be talking about Casper.
Right.
So this is something that just, as I mentioned before, was not talked about. This was something that was not shared. To be perfectly honest, I did not find out my mother's true feelings about the paranormal until much, much, much later in life, when as a mature adult we sat down and discussed a lot of these things. But at the time, there was no nurturing. There was no, mom, dad, what's going on? You just didn't have that. You just kept it to yourself, which any psychologist will tell you is the worst possible thing you can do. So,
yeah.
You know, in answer to the question, believe me, I wish, I wish there had been that capability of being able to talk about it and have somebody explain it. That's what drives me today, is the knowledge that there are literally millions of people out there that are undergoing circumstances in which they live in fear and confusion and frustration and have no one to explain this to them. And this is where I come in. This is where I try to sit down and help people understand exactly what they're going through and what the consequences are to them and their families.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things that that was one of your, you know, topics that we wanted to discuss tonight was the importance of that understanding and how it affects the living, but also a ghostly apparition. Would you mind kind of sharing? Because, I mean, most of the time, you know, we really focus on our interactions with this phenomena and how it affects us, but rarely do we think about its effect on the apparition.
And that's very true. If you think about it, there was a great movie which was very popular, The Sixth Sense. And in the movie, Bruce Willis plays a man that has passed on and is totally unaware of the fact that he is a ghost. And he interacts with a young child who can see and talk to him. Well, they did a very, very good job in the movie of explaining how somebody that has tragically passed on, how it is possible for that person not to be, either be aware of it or be willing to accept it. So just as people on our side of the dimension become afraid and frustrated and confused, so do people, souls that have passed on and are on the other side of the dimension. And so we have a spirit that is attempting to communicate with the living, and for some unbeknownst reason to them, testing has a strong probability of being a spirit which is frustrated, afraid, and confused, and is acting out in order to try to get attention, in order to express itself. So it happens on both sides of the coin. It's possible that the living are frustrated and that the dead spirit is frustrated as well. So going into that situation, doing some research, doing some investigation, and really finding out what's going on and finding out that may be what is going on, then it's a case of actually, this is going to sound crazy, but it's a case of sitting down and really counseling both sides.
That's funny. Now, when you said perceived haunting, so I take it there's you make a distinction between, let's say, a presence and a haunting.
I try not to go into a situation believing that a place is haunted. I try not to go into a situation trying to believe that a place is not haunted. In other words, I'm trying to go in objectively to try to really get a true picture of what's going on. That's not always easy, and I will be the first to admit it. Being a human being, you know, it would be very easy, probably easier for me, to go into a situation and say, okay, this place is haunted. These people have just told me stories. This place is haunted. Well, in order for me to do justice to these people, I really need to do my best to find out how much of it is perceived, how much of it may be, I don't like to use the word delusional, but let's say imagined, and how much of it is actual. So you kind of have to do some detective work and use some science to the best of your ability in order to separate what's real and what's perceived. Because if you're going in to prove a point one way or the other, then you're not doing a justice to anyone.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, the whole idea of, you know, you find what you look for would kind of follow, you know, that, you know, if you, you know, so I'm sure the objectivity is paramount. Do you have any particular process that you use, or, you know, as a general rule, or do you have
situation? No two perceived hauntings are the same. They're like fingerprints. No two are the same. And as a result, you have to be flexible enough to go in and adapt to whatever it is that you're dealing with. What we try to do is structurally, we try to start off with what I'll call pre-investigative stage, and that is really where we do a lot of our work. We do a lot of interviewing. We sit down with the people involved, and we actually spend quite a bit of time interviewing the people that are in the situation to try to get a pretty good idea as to where we're at from a perception point. concept of survival after death. And what we hope to do is provide some insight to it, help in the prevailing thinking about that, and also to help maybe close the gap between the believers and non-believers.
Excuse me. Okay. Well, you know, I think that you know, one of the best ways, you know, to, you know, as an objective, you know, is go to, you know, library systematically, you know, in order to determine whether or not out of the investigations that you've done, how often do you find the actual, you know, apparition versus, you know, the pre-state state, and maybe there's something other than
get in touch with us, are doing so because they have reached a point where it's just intolerable. So I would imagine that our sampling of people is a little disproportionate in that we are hearing more from the extreme fringe of society. Those people, as I said, that are right to the edge, you know, I can't stand it anymore, I need to do something about it. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, you know, just running into people that, well, I might not, I don't know, I'm not sure. So I would say that the greater majority of people that we talk to are truly experiencing certain phenomena, and that what they are imagining happening is happening. One of the very, very common statements that we hear is at the outset. Hello, my name is Peter. You're not going to believe this, but or you're going to think I'm crazy, but and of course, that's where what I was thinking about earlier was in the play. When I was a puppet, feeling that same thing. If I put it to somebody, it would be the same thing. Or you're going to see, you know, you're going to come up. And you would be absolutely amazed at just listening to people that when you say they do not think you're very good at something, that you're imagining something. And yes, I do believe that what you're telling me, you keep a sense of the perception of relief in these people. It's just an unbelievable.
For people, you know, ghosts or apparitions or the paranormal, but I think still, you know, people I think are afraid of even experience whether it's fear of weird or just, you know, unbelievable something with them versus, you know, actual experience.
Yes. Now, we have something better. And one of the side effects, unintentional side effects, of the paranormal shows that are on TV nowadays is that it has brought up awareness. It has allowed some people to come out of the closet and say, yes, do believe in a spiritual existence. And so it has gotten better over the last 10 years, I'm going to say.
Here's what Heather had to say about joy potential.
Our lives have many chapters, and some transitions are scarier than others. Fortunately, the main character in your book comes in contact with people on a new job that he thought he would never have to do at his age. They listen and talk with each other, and the process they go through is magic and life-changing. Listening is one of the most important skills anyone can have and a skill anyone can develop. I so enjoyed John and Leonora and remember thinking while I was reading the book, are they real? Some people help us put our training wheels on, and some people help us take our training wheels off. Anyway, I did so enjoy the book. Thank you.
Hi, Robert. Evelyn here from treeofenchantments.com, my little online magical forest shop. And talk about magic. Boy, joy potential is truly magical. This story about a week when everything turns to a new life path, speaking of fear turning into excitement, startling new connections with others, breathtaking new thought patterns, really, I could go on and on. The ending is such a surprise. Honestly, I couldn't put it down. And when I finished reading it, I wanted more. You don't come across books like this often in life. No matter where you are, joy potential will open awareness and simply delight. Thank you, Robert, for a really wonderful book. I look forward to the next book and to the next one and the one after that. I hope many, many people read Joy Potential. They will be very glad they did.
For more information, visit www.joybook.me. That's joybook.me. Or call 843-808-0777.
Okay. Well, one of the things that I noticed is that you had indicated that, you know, one of your specialties is regarding the afterlife portion of of the paranormal phenomena. What has been your what's your view of the afterlife? I mean, you talked about a little bit about the other dimension. What's your opinion of what that is?
I believe that when conception occurs, at some point in the process, it does go on, and when it passes and goes on, I believe that it, as I said, it seeks a certain level. Some people talk about passing through the light. Some people talk about earthbound. I believe that both are possible, and not only possible, I think are probable. My own personal belief system, after 30 years of doing a lot of research, a lot of studying, and a lot of investigating, is that I personally feel that there is actually a level in my mind that I just want. As I said, eventually Dr. Ian Stinson was kind enough to spend some time with me. Now, Dr. Ian Stevenson, at that time, was the director of the Division of Personality Studies at the University of Virginia. And I consider him to be the pioneer for Western thought and reincarnation. There's an absolutely groundbreaking book which he produced in 1974, and it's called 20 Cases Suggestive of Reincarnation, and I highly, highly recommend people read it, because Dr. Stevenson, in the field, was probably one of the most renowned and respected researchers in the world. His work was so finely scientifically tuned that it had to meet very, very strict scientific codes in order for it to be considered. So the work that he produced on reincarnation is so scientifically backed that it's, once you read it, you have a very difficult time trying to discredit it, because he just did a fantastic job. Now, since he's passed on, I mean, we're into a new group of people, and there is a another gentleman that I would recommend. His name is Dr. Jim Tucker, and he's a child psychiatrist and research director of the Division of Personality Studies at the University of Virginia. And he has a book out called Life Before Life. It's a scientific investigation of children's memories of prior lives.
Mm-hmm.
And in this book, there's over 2,500 cases of reported child reincarnation memories that were scientifically evaluated for his study. Absolutely fascinating reading. And if you have any kind of curiosity about whether or not we have lived in the past and come back, these are people, these are books that you really want to explore. It's not new thinking. As a matter of fact, in Eastern society, you know, India, Pakistan, there are more people in the world that believe in reincarnation than there are people that believe in Christianity.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing. You know, once we, you know, you kind of get a, you know, a global view and recognize, you know, that, you know, that is, I mean, there's so many people believe in that, you know, and you know, it's, to me, it always amazes me the people, despite the, you know, the common belief, and even the scientific, you know, the rigorous types of studies, you know, that are followed, how some people still deny, you know, that it's, that's even a possibility.
It's you know, it's a matter of personal belief,
mm-hmm.
obviously,
mm-hmm.
and as I tell people, I'm not a missionary. My intent in life is not to convince or convert anyone to anything. My intent is to go out, do research, do study. And present it in as straightforward, scientific a manner as possible, and put that information out there. And it's up to people, for people to do with whatever they want with that information. The only thing that I would hope that they would do is to seriously sit down and at least think about it.
Yeah.
Read it, just think about it. You don't have to believe it. If you don't want to, I don't care. But at least think about it. And, you know, that's the essence of education. That's the of knowledge, is to sit down and think about things and make our own decisions. Is this something that fits into my belief system or not? But to totally disregard with the wave of a hand without even reading or studying certain things is just an absolute turnoff for me. And unfortunately, we have a lot of people in society, including scientists, that are too easily dismiss years and years of very credible scientific investigation and research and they dismiss it with the wave of a hand without even, literally, without even reading it. And just, you know, I don't believe it.
Yeah, it kind of goes against the whole idea of being a scientist, you know.
Well, it does. And what's ironic about it is they won't do it in their own field for the most part, in their own scientific modality. They'll do it to another scientific field. Let's say they're a mathematician and somebody's doing research in ESP. Well, you know, it's like, I don't believe in ESP. But, you know, don't say that about my stuff. So,
mathematics, that's a whole bunch of hooey.
Yeah. Yeah, really.
Yeah, that is really something. And, you know, it's, I think, you know, if people were, I mean, the whole idea of reincarnation, I think part of the fact that some people, you know, that some belief systems were structured to not include that because for fear that people may not take responsibility for this particular lifetime. You know what I mean? And figure, hey, I'll be back again, or you know what I mean? So I think it's kind of like a control issue, I think.
Yes.
You know, so, but then, you know, if you follow any of the Eastern beliefs that, you know, they recognize that, actually what you understand is that, you know, the idea of coming back again, you know, really should make you more responsible in this lifetime because, you know, your actions now go beyond, you know, our physical existence, this physical existence.
And if we think about it, we're not talking about anything dangerous underhanded here. What we're literally talking about is the capability of man to come back and to try to achieve a higher degree of spirituality. I mean, this is a very noble thing. It goes back, I mean, the ancient Greek philosophers were certainly very vocal about their thinking and teaching on reincarnation, but it's nothing that is that speaks against the current Christian belief of life and death, in that you know, you're either good or bad, you go to heaven or hell. Well, if you think about it, in reincarnation, we're not talking about anything drastically different here. All we're talking about is that when you do live a good life, and you get the opportunity to return and even improve yourself even more. And it's a fascinating concept, and it's certainly something that you know, I've come to accept. I think that once you do some reading by credible people that have established scientific guidelines for acceptance, if you read those guidelines and then read the case studies, as I said, it's very, very difficult not to come away impressed.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting, and you know, and I hope that, you know, a tide will change. You know, that will, you know, there will be more people that will, you know, open up their minds, you know, to recognizing that as more of a fact than fantasy. You know, one of the things I wanted to ask, I noticed in some of the reading I did on your website was a mention of deja vu and synchronicity. Do either of those events have any place, you know, in a paranormal description?
Well, I think that they are not really paranormal experiences. I believe that, let's say deja vu. I think deja vu is more a principle of a mental capacity in which I do believe that there's the physical aspect where the individual consciously or unconsciously picks up on something, the memory is played back instantaneously, making it feel like a past experience. I do believe that there has been enough work that has been processed and studied and presented that proves that the concept of deja vu is very much a result of our physical brain, you know, firing off memories quicker than we can actually process them. So you know, it not everything that happens in life that is strange or unusual is paranormal.
Right.
I mean, we are talking about some things, some very strange things that occur, and sometimes there's nothing stranger than life. There was, back in the 1930s, there was a gentleman by the name of Hubert Pierce. And Dr. J.B. Ryan at Duke University, who was very heavy into lab testing, brought Hubert Pierce in to do some telepathy testing to see exactly how legitimate that concept is. And with some very interesting results, mathematically speaking, if you or I went into a laboratory and underwent the testing, let's say Zener cards testing, if we tried to guess our way through the results, or guess our way through the testing,
mm-hmm.
Mathematically the probability is that we would score no higher than 20%. Okay, that's the mathematical probabilities. Now, Hubert Pierce is a gentleman that over a prolonged period of time consistently scored in the mid-30%, which mathematically says that it's impossible that he was guessing. So, here we have a situation where we have a phenomena which was proven in the laboratory to be both physical and unknown.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have the ability, man does have the ability to have something outside of the body that does operate outside of the body, such as telepathy, such as psychokinesis, things like that. But there are things that are just perfectly explainable.
Yeah.
There are things that happen that that we'd like to think that it's strange.
Yeah.
But the reality is that there's a perfectly acceptable explanation as to why that happened.
Okay. One of the things that I was wondering is, you know, are there areas, geographic areas, that are more highly active paranormally?
I don't see any correlation to geography and proven paranormal activity. I think that there have been some testing in certain other aspects, such as geology. It's said that there are certain rock formations, for instance, with a high content, high crystal content that can produce certain effects. But as far as geography, parts of the world, parts of the country, I don't really see any pattern. No,
okay.
Not at all.
Now, are there any, I mean, in your experience in the hunting, do you have, with the your organization, Hauntings Research, do you have any, I mean, do you normally do like houses, or are you just open to people just contact you with any kind of, you know, experience, or do you specialize, I guess is the word, in any particular type of experience?
I wouldn't say we specialize. I would say that, you know, whenever you try to do some serious scientific research, I think most of us are open to any challenge, regardless of what it is. And to answer your question, sure, we do invite people to get in touch with us. We invite people to, for instance, send us photographs or audio clips that they may have of things that have happened, and you know, we certainly would look and analyze them and give our opinions. But we're always open. It could be anything from a purported haunting in the house to there's a historic site here outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It's run by the Rivers of Steel organization, and it is the remaining buildings of the Homestead Riot strike of 1892, which resulted in literally a armed conflict where people were killed and wounded. So we do anything, you know, anything and almost everything. We're totally open. We look at it as a path to more knowledge. So whether it's some historical site or whether it's a public site, a political site, it doesn't matter. It's the thirst for knowledge. It's the thirst, how can we advance? And how can we help people?
Yeah.
If this is something that we can do that will help people, then we're all for it.
That's good. Now, we're actually down to the last 5 minutes, so if you wouldn't mind sharing, what was probably, would you say, one of your most memorable experiences, you know, with, you know, an investigation or maybe even in some research that you've done? What would you say is probably one that really sticks out as a real good one?
It's actually one that's ongoing right now. We are in the third year of a research project at a place called Larimer Mansion. It's a 223-year-old bed and breakfast, beautiful place, located just outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. But we, in that three-year study, we have spent a good deal of time on a painting, if you can believe this, on a painting that, since October, that painting has changed faces and bodies in the painting at least 9 different times.
Wow.
And we are absolutely stumped to date as to what is going on. We have it, you know, we have them on photo of situations where 9 different times people that are in the painting are not supposed to be in the painting. And we were just meeting this afternoon, as a matter of fact, examining another picture in which another phenomena of that picture was showing itself. And that is probably one of the more memorable things and one of the more meaningful things that we've run across, because we're talking about people in hauntings research that have occupational backgrounds in science research and analysis. I mean, these are people that have spent their entire life doing these things, and we cannot explain it. We just cannot figure out what the heck is going on with this thing. So it's an ongoing study.
Wow.
But that would be one place that immediately comes to mind is Larimer Mansion.
Wow, that is fascinating. Do you post any of that information on your website, or is that something that one can follow? Or
as a matter of fact, if you go to hauntingsresearch.com, our website,
mm-hmm.
we do post pictures of some of the more unusual things that we run across during the investigative stages. We also have a presence on Facebook, which we try to keep updated with announcements, experiences, recent developments, and also unusual pictures. But I would suggest those are two very, very good sites. We do try to keep people involved. We do have a newsletter that we send out. It's you can sign up on our website, and it's free. Free is a good price.
It is.
And we send it out by email, and in that, you know, we try to keep people up to date as to what kind of research we're doing.
Okay. Well, that's great. Well, I'm glad that we were able to get in both the website and the Facebook page for people to keep in contact with. And again, the website is www.hauntingsresearch.com. I did not have that in the show page description, but I will right after the show. Well, Ed, this has been fascinating. Thank you for your time. I appreciate all your insight.
Robert, I've had a blast. It's a great time. Thanks for having me on.
Great. Thank you. And everyone, I do want to remind you, we have a show tomorrow. It's right now scheduled at 7 p.m., but I may be moving it up earlier. So be sure to check out on either my Facebook page, or you can also find out on the calendar page at www.biteradio.me if I go ahead and move that up. So everyone, thank you for joining us for this edition of the Mystical Cruise Show. And until we meet again, cruise on.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to BiteRadio.me's Mystical Cruise Show. To become a friend or follower, visit www.blogtalkradio.com/BiteRadioMe. You can also find us on Facebook and on Twitter at BiteRadioMe or at our website www.BiteRadio.me. That's BiteRadio.me. Until we meet again, cruise on.